going to start with source number two. Source number two is based on a famous question about Hanukkah. The question is as follows. We know that there were two miracles associated with Hanukkah, two distinct miracles. One was the nace of the Nitzachon Luchama, the military victory, that we won a big war over the Yavanim. There were more of them, they were stronger, etc., but we still won the war. So that was a nace of the Nitzachon Luchama. That was a military victory. The other miracle of Hanukkah was the nace Pach Shemen, the nace of the oil that was supposed to last for one day actually lasted for 8 days. These are two separate miracles. Now, you find something very striking, very, very striking. If you read the Al HaNisim, the tefillah that we say in our Birchas HaMazon, in the Bracha of Nodova, and the tefillah that we say in the Davening, in the Bracha of Modim, so the almost exclusive focus of Al HaNisim is the nace of the Muhammad, the military victory. The nace of the Pach Shemen is barely mentioned at all. It's very strange. You read the whole Al HaNisim. We're thanking Hashem. It's called Hoda'ah. Modim and Odofah, that's the bracha of Hoda'ah, where you're thanking Hashem for things. We're thanking Hashem for all these things. So we also thank Hashem for the wonderful things of Hanukkah. And we focus almost exclusively on the military victory. We barely mention the nace Pach Shemen. There's one phrase at the end of Al HaNisim, which says, V'hadriku neiros v'chatzros kachecha. V'hadriku neiros v'chatzros kachecha. And they lit candles in the chatzros of the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a question what that sentence means. Some say it refers to the Nes Pach Shemen. That's a hint to the Nes Pach Shemen. So if it is the Nes Pach Shemen, it's a very veiled hint. And it's barely mentioned at all in the Al HaNisim. Others say no. The Nes Pach Shemen, that happened inside the Heichal. In the Beis HaMikdash, where it says they lit neiros b'chatzros kachecha, they lit neiros out in the courtyards. You know, so that refers to something else. They lit candles when they won the war, but it wasn't that sentence doesn't refer to Nes Pach Shemen at all. Okay, there are two views. If you look at Mefarshim on the Siddur, there are two views. Either way, either the Nes Pach Shemen is not mentioned at all in the Al HaNisim, or at best, there's a hinted, veiled reference made to it towards the end of Al HaNisim. But the focus of Al HaNisim is the Nes Mechah. Very nice. Then you open up the Gemara. The Gemara in Shabbos, the famous Gemara in Shabbos, on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara says, "My Hanukkah." Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. My Hanukkah. What is Hanukkah? And the Gemara gives you a brief history of Hanukkah. And in the Gemara's history of Hanukkah, the almost exclusive focus of the Gemara is the Nes Pach Shemen. And the Gemara barely even mentions the military victory. The Gemara says they came in, and the Yavanim were metame the whole base of Mikdash. And the Hashemarayim came in and Unetzachum, and they defeated them. Mamash, one word, Unetzachum, they defeated them. And then they couldn't find any Tachar Shemen, and they finally found this little one Pach Shemen, and it lasted for 8 days, and Chazal made a Yomtif. So it's a very striking contrast between the Al HaNisim in the Davening and the Gemara in its discussion of Hanukkah. Our Davening, we focus on the military victory, and in the Gemara, the focus almost exclusively is on the Nes Pach Shemen. Why? This is a very powerful question. It's a question which should keep you up at night. That the Gemara talks about what is Hanukkah, and it talks about the Nes Pach Shemen. And you read the Al HaNisim, and the whole Al HaNisim is about the Nes Mechama. But what's going on? Which is it? Which is the important part of Hanukkah? And if they're both important, how come the Gemara mentions A and the Al HaNisim mentions B? What's going on here? What can explain this very striking contrast between the Davening and the Gemara? Okay, that's a powerful question. I assume there are different answers to that question. The answer that I want to present and want to discuss is the Maharal's answer. The Maharal's answer is source number two. Now, as a total aside, on the back of your sheet, there are two long footnotes, sources, 2A and 2A, 2B, and 2C. We're not going to do them. The way I'm explaining the Maharal is the way Rav Mirsky explains the Maharal, sources 2A and 2B. That's Talyonei Halacha. That's the pshat that I think is correct. There's another pshat of this Maharal, source 2C, which I personally think is incorrect. If you're interested in this topic and you want to analyze this Maharal more in depth, read these two things and come with a discuss it if you want. But there's a difference between how Mirsky explained it, which I think is the correct approach, that's what I'm presenting, and the other approach, which I don't think is the pshat of the Maharal at all. So that's just out of interest. But so I'm explaining it the way the Maharal Mirsky does. It's all there on the back. So let's read the Maharal source number two. The Maharal says, V'yesh lomar, the double underlined part. She'ikar ma shekavu Yimei Chanukah, Bishvil Mashenitzvos HaYevonim. Iker, the main reason, the main thing, the main idea in the Yimei Chanukah is the fact that we conquered the Yevonim. And he explains a little bit previously as well that that is the main issue, the main thing that we're thanking Hashem for. That on Chanukah, when we thank Hashem for Chanukah, the main thing we thank Hashem for, the main idea Chazal had in mind when they established the Yom Tov was thank Hashem for the military victory. And the Maral explains a little bit previously why. Because that's always what we thank Hashem for. The military victory saved our lives. And in general, when a Jew's life is saved, they thank Hashem in a special way. There's something called Birchas Hagona. Certain people who faced near death and survived say Birchas Hagona. Just like Birchas Hagona is a special bracha you say when you survive a brush with death, so too, the Neis Mechama, we won a military victory. If it wasn't for the military victory, we'd be dead. The Yevonim would have killed us. So when Hashem saves your life with a military victory, so you thank Hashem. So the main thing, the main idea in Chanukah is to thank, but what Chazal had in mind, thank Hashem for the military victory. And that's why, in the Al Nisim, which is in the bracha of Hoda'ah, of thanks of Hashem, in davening and Birchas Hamazon, what do we thank Hashem for primarily? The military victory, because that's the main thing of Chanukah. The main thing of Chanukah is thank Hashem for the military victory. Well, this is very important, by the way. This is one of the major themes of Chanukah is that when the Jewish people have a military victory, they are supposed to thank Hashem. That is one of the major themes of Chanukah, according to the Maharal. When the Jewish people have a military victory, they're supposed to thank Hashem. How do you thank Hashem? There are different ways to thank Hashem. But clearly, that when we win a military victory, we know we win the war because Hashem helps us. We have an obligation to thank Hashem. That is a major theme of Chanukah, according to the Maharal. The main thing we thank Hashem for in Chanukah is the military victory. Fine, very nice. But the Maharal says, let's go on. Rock. Shalom hayanire. Shalom nitzach anayde neis Hashem yisbarach. But it wasn't so obvious, it wasn't so clear that this victory was an Esh from Hashem and not from their own strength. Therefore a miracle was done with the candles, so they should know that everything was a miracle, even the Mokam. So Mirsky explains this, and this is what he means, he explains it as follows. See, Chazal were concerned that Chazal understood that when we won the military victory, it was from Hashem. But for the average Jew in Israel, a military victory, maybe you could explain it in a more natural way. Maybe 10 years, 20 years later, they'll say, oh, we were strong, we were this, we were that. Whenever you have a military victory, it's always possible to try and find other explanations other than Hashem for the victory. So therefore, it wasn't an obvious, overt miracle which jumps out at you. It wasn't an obvious overt miracle which jumps out at you. So therefore, Chazal were concerned, if we make a Yom Tov out of this day, out of the military victory, so then, it might be in 5 years, and 10 years, and 20 years, at some point, the Jewish people would celebrate Chanukah as a military victory of the strength of the Hashem Raim. Some Jews nowadays, unfortunately, celebrate Chanukah focusing on the strength of the Hashem Raim. And they forget about Hashem, they forget about God. So Chazal were concerned. That's why, he says, Hashem did a Neis Pachshemen. The Neis Pachshemen is an overt, clear Neis Nigla. It's a miracle which is completely outside the natural forces of nature. A Neis Nigla, completely unnatural miracle. There is no natural way, there is no rational way to explain away the Neis Pachshemen. So the Neis Pachshemen was, in a sense, Hashem was saying, I am here. A Neis Nigla, I am here, I am involved. The time period we're in nowadays is the time of Nisim, and from the Neis Pach Shemen, it became more apparent that the Muhammad itself, the military victory itself, was also what? A Neis as well. What type of Neis? What type of Neis do we call a military victory? A Neis Nister. A hidden miracle. A Neis Nister is a miracle which Hashem does within the forces of nature. A Neis Nister is a miracle which Hashem does within the force of nature. The miracle is, in a sense, hidden within the natural world. So a military victory is the classic Neis Nister, that you fight a battle and one side wins over the other. So people explain, oh, they were smarter, they surprised them, whatever it is. We know Hashem's running the show. A neis nigel would be, let's say, the mechamos with Yericho. We walked around the chamos seven times, blew the trumpets, and the walls fell down. That's a neis nigel, totally unnatural. But every other mechama, practically in Jewish history, is a neis nister. We're fighting. We know Hashem's helping us, and we win the war, and we thank Hashem for what He did. But still, it's a miracle within the laws, within the forces of nature, within the natural world. The neis pachshemen is totally unnatural. So what the morale is saying is that from the neis pachshemen, from the neis nigla of the pachshemen, it became more clear and more obvious to all the Jews that the military victory was a neis nister. From the neis nigla of the pachshemen, we appreciate that even the military victory is a neis nister from Hashem. From the neis nigla of the pachshemen, we appreciate that even the military victory is a neis nister from Hashem. Well, so the morale says, so that's the pshat. Why in the Gemara, the focus is on the neis nigla, on the pachshemen. Why? Because the Gemara is discussing what event triggered Chazal establishing the Yom Tov. What event triggered Chazal establishing them? To establish a Yom Tov, Chazal were concerned. We want the Jews to thank Hashem for the military victory. But we're afraid if we make a Yom Tov about a military victory, then the Jews might thank Hashem for the Jews might forget about Hashem and just focus on their own military might. Therefore, what event triggered the creation of the Yom Tov of Hanukkah? The Neis Pachshem. So the Gemara's focus is on what event triggered Chazal making the Yom Tov. The Gemara says for the Neis Pachshem. The Alanisim's focus is, once Yom Tov was created, what is the major thing the Jews should thank Hashem for? And focus on during Hanukkah? The answer is, the Neis of the Mechama. So that's the Maral's answer, a beautiful answer, to explain the striking contrast between the Alanisim and the focus and the Gemara's discussion of Hanukkah, when the Alanisim is the focus of the Neis Mechama, and the Gemara's focus is the Neis Pachshem. And what I said to you now is, I'm just fleshing out what Rav Mercy says that's on the back, his approach to the Maral, which I think is the correct approach. So according to the Maral, one theme of Hanukkah is that from the Neis Nigla, the Pachshemen, we appreciate that the apparently natural military victory is a Neis Nista from Hashem. Okay. Let's go on. Every military victory is an Neis Nister, by definition. Well, first of all, the Maral says it. The Maral says it. But to take the War of Independence in Israel. So, every Jew realized that was a Neis from Hashem. But if you read Newsweek, or you read a Time magazine, they give explanations. Well, the Jews were this, the Jews were smarter. There's a book called O Jerusalem. If you read the book, during the War of Independence, you have the Jews holding broomsticks, whacking the broomsticks, makes a noise, the Arabs run away. That's an ace. That's not a normal event. We know it comes from Hashem, but it wasn't an ace that was outside the forces of nature, and that's exactly why you didn't have every single person in the world saying, "Oh, there's a God in the world because of the independence war of independence." An ace nister is any miracle which could be explained away within the laws of nature. Is an ace nister by definition. It's hidden within the rules of nature. The Milchamas Yericho is an ace nister. I mean, you could see a difference between the Mechamas Yericho and the Mechamas of the Chashmonaim. It wasn't as if the Chashmonaim raised their hands and the enemies all died. Like if you read Josephus, it's as if they picked their hands up and all the enemies died of a plague. There was a battle, they were fighting, there was a struggle, and they won the war. I'm sure many people felt, oh, they were smarter, they outsmarted them. The Six-Day War. Another obvious nature. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. He says, of course, these things, Moshe has a tshuva. All of these military victories are nisim. And of course, we have to thank Hashem for the nisim. These are nisim. These are obvious nisim. But if you read Time and Newsweek, you should read them from 1967. They explained how we surprised the Arabs. They were sleeping. We attacked the airfields early in the morning. We planned it all out carefully. We knew exactly when all the planes would be on the ground. All that is true. And so Hashem decided that we should win that war in a miraculous way, couched within, hidden within the laws of nature. Every war can be explained away in the laws of nature. Except for what the Mechamas Yericho. So every war by definition is a Neis Nister. That's just by definition. That's what the Maral says here. And that's what logically it makes a lot of sense. We'll discuss this more in prayer time, the fight against the Amalek. We'll discuss that, the idea of Neis Nister as well. Okay. That's source number one. Yeah. Right. So the Maral says, and Reversky fleshes out, that would make sense, but there's a danger if you talk about the whole all of Am Yisrael You might have people who lose focus on what's really important about the Yom Tov. Take, for example, holidays. Many Jews, unfortunately, celebrate Hanukkah as the military victory of the Chashuv Inayim without focusing on Hashem. So obviously we need a lot of help. So listen, the Nes Baruch Shem, it works for those who open their eyes. There are some people, even with the Nes Baruch Shem, they're still going to keep their eyes closed. What can you do? I mean, it's a famous song, Mi Malel, what's the pasuk? Mi Malel Bros Hashem, right? But when they put that song in recent history, they changed the word to Mi Malel Bros Yisrael, because it rhymes better. But as Paul points out, they changed the word from Hashem to Yisrael. That's a big change. Either it's Hashem's Bros or Yisrael's Bros. Anyway, so Chazal were concerned that even back then, the Jews might end up having the wrong focus on the Yom Tov. So they used the Nes Baruch Shem. I'm protecting the morale. That's what the morale says. I think it's a very, very good shot. That's what the morale says. Okay. Source number three. Source number three is a source from the Darash Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein, an excellent sefer. Rav Moshe Feinstein there refers to an answer to a famous question. The most famous question about Hanukkah is, why do we have 8 days of Hanukkah? The question of the Beis Yosef. That the oil was enough oil to last for 1 day. And the oil worked for 8 days. That means the miracle was only for 7 days, because the first day was natural. So why do we have 8 days of Hanukkah if the miracle itself was only 7 days long? So there are dozens of answers to this question. So Rav Moshe here refers to the answer that I like the best. The answer of a simplicissimo mikel. And Rav Moshe explains as follows. It's based on the famous Ramban. The Ramban says in the end of Bo that when you think about it, all of Teva, all of the natural world really is a nes. But it's a nes nister. It's a hidden miracle. When you think about it, all of Teva is really a nes. It's a nes nister. For example, the fact that the sun rises. The sun rises every morning. Why? Well, because the earth spins on its axis, so when it spins around, so therefore it's as if the sun, it seems to us as if the sun rises in a sense. Why does the earth spin? Because of the laws of gravity, that the laws of gravity, the earth which is related to the sun, it spins on its axis. Well, okay, very nice. Why does gravity exist? Well, that's a question which scientists can't answer. Scientists explain what the laws of gravity are. They can give perfect definitions. What is gravity? That the two bodies of mass, of a certain mass, have a certain relationship to each other, and that's how the solar system works. That's how the moon works with the earth. But if someone says a deeper question, well, why is gravity part of the natural world? Scientists can't answer that question. Scientists can describe perfectly what the natural world is. Well, the answer why gravity exists is because Hashem put gravity in the world. Because without gravity, the world would be chaotic. We'd all be floating around. It'd be hard to learn Torah if you're floating around all the time, bumping into this ceiling. So for that reason, among others, Hashem created gravity in the world. So the fact that the sun rises in the morning is because gravity exists, meaning Hashem says, I want gravity to exist in order for the sun to rise every morning. So the fact that nature runs naturally is because of Hashem's direct intervention. The fact that nature runs naturally is because of Hashem's direct intervention. If Hashem decided not to intervene differently, then nature wouldn't run that way. For example, there were several times in history when the sun didn't rise and set normally. Right? In Yeshua's fight. Who's fight? Against Givon, right? So the sun stayed up longer. So why? Because Hashem decided he wants the sun to stay up longer. So from there we see that the fact that the sun rises and sets is not natural. It's a nace that happens so often, we're used to it. So we view it as nature. We assume it's going to happen tomorrow. And we have a righteousness it'll happen tomorrow. But it's only happening tomorrow because Hashem is intervening and saying, I want gravity to continue to work, therefore the sun will rise and set. So the Ramban explains, all of Teva is really a hidden miracle from Hashem. And the Ramban says, how do I know this? What's the best proof that all of Teva is a nace from Hashem? When Hashem does a nes nigla. When Hashem does a nes nigla, that's the best indication, that's the best proof that all of Teva is nes nister. How? He explains in the following way. Hashem is a nes nigla, like Kriyas Yom Tov. Nes nigla. A nes nigla is where Hashem changes the natural world. The natural world runs in one direction. Hashem says, no, It's going in a different direction. So Hashem changes nature. Now let's think about this. If Hashem changes nature, that means, obviously, Hashem controls nature. If Hashem controls nature, that means that when nature runs naturally, quote-unquote, it's because Hashem is telling nature to run naturally. So that means that nature running naturally is an assistance from Hashem. When you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. The fact that Hashem changes nature shows that Hashem controls nature. If Hashem controls nature, then obviously that means when nature runs naturally, because Hashem is telling nature to run naturally. Which means, by definition, that when nature runs naturally, it is a nes nista from Hashem. This is what the Ramban says. That when you see a nes nigla, and you think about it for a little while, you appreciate from a nes nigla that all of teva is a nes nista from Hashem. It's a very famous idea in the Ramban. So based on that Ramban, Rav Simcha says as follows. When oil burns at all, that's a miracle. That's a nes nista from Hashem. Why does oil burn? So you'll say, well, because there are certain properties, I don't know, there are certain chemical properties within oil which cause it to burn when you put a wick inside and you light the wick. Very nice. But why are those natural properties there? The natural properties are there because Hashem put them there. So the fact that oil burns is a nes nista from Hashem. But it's a nes that we don't notice, we don't focus on. So he says as follows. When the Nes Pachshemen happened, and the oil burned for 8 days, so there were 7 days of Nes Nigla. Hashem was announcing, I am changing nature. I control nature. So from the 7 days of Nes Nigla, we appreciated and understood that even the first day, which appeared to be natural, is also really a Nes. It's really also a Nes. From the 7 days of Nes Nigla, we understood, we appreciated that even the first day, which appears to be natural, is really a nes, only a nes nista. So if simple says, that's why you have 8 days of Hanukkah. 7 days celebrates the nes nigla, and 1 day celebrates the nes nista. Beautiful answer. That even the first day, when the shaman was, there was enough shaman for 1 day, but even that's a nes. We just don't notice it normally. On Hanukkah, when there's 7 days of nes nigla, we have a special obligation to thank Hashem for that as well. Because we have to focus on it and notice it. The fact that all of Teva is really a nes nista from Hashem. So I think, simple this is saying, that from the nes nigla, the Pach Shemen, I appreciate that even Shemen burning at all is a nes nista from Hashem. From the nes nigla, the Pach Shemen, I appreciate that even the Shemen burning at all the first day is a nes nista from Hashem. So therefore, this comes out very nicely, I think, that the Maral's explanation on the Gemara and Rav Simple's explanation about the Beis Yosef's question fit together very nicely. From the Nes Nigla the Pach Shemen, I appreciate that the military victory was a Nes Nista from Hashem. And from the Nes Nigla the Pach Shemen, I appreciate that the apparently natural burning of the oil is a Nes Nista from Hashem. So I think those two sources just fit together very nicely. Sources 2 and 3 fit together very nicely as a major theme of Hanukkah. To appreciate and thank Hashem for Nes Nista based on the Nes Nigla which He gave us. Okay. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Sefer, uses Rav Simcha Disl's idea to give a great answer to a great question. But I want to present the question and other answers to the question first before we get to Rav Moshe's answer. So now we'll spend a few minutes raising a certain question. And then we'll discuss that question for a while. Then we'll get back to Rav Moshe's answer to that question. Okay. In source number 4, there's a Gemara. The Gemara in the middle of the discussion of Hanukkah. Quotes the famous Medrash. The Medrash says that the boar, the pit which Yosef was thrown into, wasn't really empty. The pit really, what did it have inside? The chashim of kubir kavim, snakes and scorpions. So the Gemara says. You look at source number 4. The Gemara says that an er Hanukkah above 20 amos is pasul. And the very next line, the Gemara says. The story of the Medrash that Yosef's pit had snakes, scorpions in it. So the famous question is, what's the connection? Why does the Gemara, in the middle of a discussion of Hanukkah, throw in this Medrash about Yosef that the boar had nechashim refugim in it? That's a very famous question. What is the connection between those two Gemaras? Everything in the Gemara, there's a connection, there's a flow, there's a reason why. It's totally out of place. Why is it there? So the question clear? Okay. So there's a simple answer to the question. The simple answer to the question is, it's the same Amora who said both. That's really probably the truth. Okay. The same Amora said both. You know, the Gemara was originally not written down, so they had to have memory devices to remember everything, memorize everything. So they would put the statements of the same Amora in order, you know, together, to remember all of them at the same time. It's easier to remember. Like, Rav so-and-so says da-da-da-da, and da-da-da, you know, put a whole list. So it happens to be the same Amora, so that's probably why it's there. But the Mepharshim give deeper explanations to explain the connection between these two Gemaras. So the first explanation we're going to learn, well, that's the second. The first one was it's the same Amora. The second explanation is the famous explanation of the Torah Tamima in Source 4a, which is where the Torah Tamima says as follows. It says as follows. The Ramban on Chumash raises the famous following question. So the Chazal say that the pit which Yosef was thrown into had snake scorpions in it. That means when Yosef wasn't killed by the snakes and scorpions, what was that? What was that? A nes nigla, even. Maybe even a nes nigla. A nes nigla. That you see poisonous snakes there. He's jumping on these snakes with his bare feet. And, one second. And he's not killed. So the Ramban says it's a nes nigla. The Ramban says that the Ramban has a kasha. That if the brothers saw that Yosef was miraculously saved in the pit, how could they not back out on their plan? The brothers want to kill Yosef. They have good reason to kill Yosef in their mind. But then Hashem is sending them a sign. Don't kill him. He's a tzaddik. How could the brothers not back out on their plan if they saw the sacred scorpions in the pit? That's the Ramban's question. That's the Ramban's question. So the Ramban gives two possible answers. One answer he gives is, the Ramban gives one answer with two possible approaches. The answer he gives is, the brothers must not have seen the snakes and scorpions. They must not have seen them. Had they seen the snakes and scorpions, they would have definitely backed out on their plan. They didn't see them. Why didn't they see them? Either he says, because there must have been holes inside of the pit. You know, if you have a hole, it's not lined with concrete. So there are, in this deep hole, within the hole, there are crevices. So it must be that when they went to take Yosef out of the pit, the snake scorpions went into the crevices. So they didn't see them. Or he says that the bore was too deep. So they didn't see the bottom. That's what the Ramban says. Well, let's just read it inside. It's source number 4b. Beam Cain, the Ramban says, Hayun Nechashim are covering the Chorei HaBor. The Nechashim are covering when holes in the side of the pit. Oh, or it was so deep that they didn't see them. She'igu ha'yu ro'im osam, boys equal Yosef. If they saw them and they didn't injure Yosef, he takes scorpions. Ha'yu ha'davar barurim, it should have been clear to them. Shenaso neis gadol, that a neis gadol was done to Yosef. B'shut tzadi gamor, and it's tzadi gamor. V'yedu ki zchuso tzatzgan b'chol ra, and they should know that his zchus would save them from all evil. V'eich yigu b'mashiach Hashem, and how could they touch? I mean, how could they try to injure Hashem's chosen one, anointed one, that Hashem saves him. So the Ramban is convinced if the brothers saw the nes, this nes nigla, they would have backed out on the plan. It must be they didn't see the nes. That's what the Ramban says. Why didn't they see the nes? Either the holes on the side or the pit was too deep. So picking up on that Ramban, the Torah Tamim says as follows. He says, Taka, you know what? The pit was too deep. How deep was the pit? He says it was more than 20 amas deep. And we know from what? We know from the halachas of Ner Chanukah that a Ner Chanukah above 20 amos is possible because you're not going to see it too high. So just like you won't see a Ner Chanukah when it's too high, the brothers didn't see the Nechashim in the pit because it was too deep. It was too low. It was 20 amas deep. And the Torah Tamim says, that's the connection of the two Gemaras. Why does the Gemara quote the story of Yosef in the pit, that of the Nechashim Rekavim in the pit, right after it quotes the halacha of a Ner Chanukah above 20 amos is possible? Because they both have the same halachic idea. They both reflect the same idea. That a Ner Chanukah above 20 amos is possible because you don't see it. And the Nechashim Rekavim weren't seen by the brothers because it was too deep. Okay. It's a very nice pshat, but it's much stronger than that, because the Torah points out it's not Stam he's guessing 20 amos. He quotes from the earlier Achronim, there's a remez in the Chumash that the pit was 20 amos deep. There's a remez in the Chumash that the pit was 20 amos deep. And the remez goes as follows. The verb used in the Chumash when the brothers threw Yosef into the pit is Vayashrichu. And they threw him, Vayashrichu. So the root being Shem La Mitzvah. That's the root of the verb the brothers used, that the Torah uses when the brothers threw Yosef into the pit, Vayashrichu. Now, we find another place where the Torah uses that same verb. It's by the Olas Ha'Oth. When a bird is offered on the Mizbeach, so a bird isn't shechted by the neck. The Kohen does shechit, something similar to shechita from the back of the head with his fingernail, and he cuts the back of the bird's neck from the back. And when the bird is bleeding, when the bird is bleeding, he squeezes the blood onto the Mizbeach. And the Kohen stands here halfway up the Mizbeach when he does the Olas Ha'Oth. Kills the bird and squeezes the blood onto the Mizbeach. Fine. Then, the lesson is that the Kohen removes part of the bird's gullet, like the throat and the stomach. And he takes that piece of the gullet and he throws it here. Something like that. Why does he do that? Because birds fly all over the place. So it's very possible my bird ate from your property. Very possible. Stolen property. You know, the topic is you can't control everywhere your bird's going to go. So we don't want any stolen property, even in the bird's stomach, on the Mizbeach. So therefore, this is important to say, therefore, the Kohen has to remove that part of the bird's stomach. And he's standing here, and he throws Lachamadesh, with a special spot on top of the Mizbeach, where every morning, the first avodah of the Beit HaMikdash was that the Kohen would go onto the Mizbeach on top, take a shovel full of ashes, and put it here, Lachamadesh, and the night happened, and the ashes sunk into the ground. Every morning, a night thing will happen, the ashes sunk into the ground. That's for the Mach Madesh. So the Kohen would stand here, and he would throw this part of the bird from here onto the Mach Madesh. And the word in the Torah for that throwing is the same root. And that throw was more than 20 amos, or it was 20 amos. Because the Mishnah explained that from here to here was 30 amos, and from the top of the to the end was 20 amos. So when the Kohen was standing here and throwing this part of the Tarbush, the throw was more than 20 amos. The Torah says that's the shot. We see the root, the Mishmir, and the root by Eshlifu. The root Shalach in Hebrew in the Torah means more than 20 amos. So that's the remez. When the Torah says they threw Yosef into the pit, the Torah is often used this verb by Eshlifu as a hint that the throw was more than 20 amos. Just like by the Olas Ha'Oth, the throw was more than 20 amos. That's a very nice shot. So and that's how we know the pit was 20 amos deep, and that's the connection between the two Gemaras. Is that clear? That's a nice Torah team. Okay. That's the that's the famous shot of the connection between the two Gemaras. It's the same root, Shin Lamed Chaf. There are a lot of words in Hebrew. There are a lot of words in Hebrew for throwing. Vayiz Rekuv. It could have said Vayiz Rekuv, Oso Alabor. It didn't. It said Vayashlichu. Why that verb? So the Targum says it's hinting to us how far the throw was. It was more than 20 amos. Just like we find in one place, the root Vashalach means more than 20 amos. So to here, the same root means more than 20 amos. What? How does it connect to what? No. In this carbon, part of which contains an avoda of throwing this piece of carbon to the Mekom HaDeshen, that throw was more than 20 amos. That we know from just mathematics. And the verb for that act is Beishwif. So we see the root, Shin Lamed Chaf, means throwing something more than 20 amos. So therefore, when it says Vayashlichu, by the brothers, I have a right to infer, oh, here too, it must have been a throw more than 20 amos. And if that's true, the Rebbe says, Then I can understand why the Gemara quotes this story right after the idea that a Ner Chanukah looks for Yamas is possible. A Ner Chanukah looks for Yamas is possible because you don't see it. Their brothers threw him into the pit. What's the connection? The connection is their brothers didn't see the Nechashim Nechashim at the bottom of the pit like the Ramban says. Why didn't they see it? Because the pit was too deep, 20 amos deep. How do I know it was 20 amos deep? Because it's by a shlichu, the same verb. Okay. Rav Moshe gives a different shot which connects the two Gemaras. And Rav Moshe's shot is as follows. If it's only for this Derash Moshe, this shir is worth it. This is one of my favorite Derash. I like the Derash Moshe a lot. And this is one of my favorite lines, paragraphs in the whole Darash Moshe. So it's 4C. He explains as follows. So according to Rav Moshe, based on Rav Simcha Zissel, we have as follows. When a person sees the Ner Chanukah, that symbolizes what? Neis Nigla, the Pachshem. What should you think about when you see the Neis Nigla, the Pachshem? What should you think about? That all of nature is really a Neis Nigla from Hashem. But that requires thought. There's an Nesnikla, as I explained. The Nesnikla, Hashem changes nature. That means Hashem controls nature. That means Hashem runs the natural world. That means all of Teva is Nesh from Hashem. But Moshe writes, that requires thought. You have to focus on it. You have to absorb the message of the Nesnikla. The goal of the Ner Chanukah is see the Ner Chanukah, which symbolizes Nesnikla, and absorb its message. So Moshe writes, a Ner Chanukah of 20 amos, 30 feet high. Why is it possible? Not because you don't see it. You do see it. If you look up like this, you'll see it. The Moshe writes, no, it's possible because it's not within your normal range of vision. The reason why Nechon above 20 amos is possible is because it's not within your normal range of vision. When people walk, they walk like this. They don't walk like this. You walk like this, you fall off the stages. You bump into things, you walk with your head up. People don't walk with their head up in the sky. They walk with their head normally. When you walk normally, you don't normally see things more than 30 feet high. Why is that possible? Because the whole point of Ner Chanukah is not just to glance at the Ner Chanukah, but to look at it and focus on it and absorb its message. If I want you to absorb the message of the Ner Chanukah, it's not enough to just see it for a second. You have to look at it and focus on it and absorb it and look at it. So the idea is I walk down the street, I see the Ner Chanukah. Neis Nigla. Chanukah, there's Neis Nigla. Hashem changes nature as I'm walking. That is what a Jew should do when they see the Ner's Chanukah. And you're not going to do that if it's above 20 amos. So Moshe says that exact idea that when you see a Ner's Nigla, if you want it to affect you, you have to focus on it and absorb its message. That's what happened. That's the mistake. That exact idea happened with the brothers. Rav Moshe explains differently than the Ramban. Rav Moshe claims that the brothers did see the Nechashim and their brother. The brothers saw a Neis Nigla. That's what Rav Moshe writes. They saw the Neis Nigla. I thought, why didn't they back out on the plan? Because Rav Moshe writes, the brothers, we'll read it in a second, the brothers were so involved with their Nekama, they were so into their revenge and jealousy against Yosef, they didn't notice it. They saw it. They didn't absorb the message of the Neis Nigla. When the brothers threw Yosef into the pit, they saw a Neis Nigla happen in front of their eyes and didn't absorb its message. So Moshe writes, that's the connection of the two Gemaras. That seeing a Neis Nigla isn't enough. If you want the Neis Nigla to impact on you, yeah, think about it and focus on it and absorb its message. How do I know it's possible to see a Neis Nigla and it won't impact on you? From the brothers by Yosef. So and that's why the halacha is a Ner Chanukah has to be less 20 amos tall. Because above 20 amos you might notice it, but you're not going to focus, you're not going to absorb its message. But below 20 amos you'll see it and focus on it and absorb its message. Let's just read it inside. Source 4C. Hariashvatin Ra'u Neis Gadol Kazeh. They saw this nace. In pain, chazinan. Therefore, they saw Hashem. Yatzilem mikora. Hashem will save him from everything. He matzachayim be'enav. Ve'chashvul asos chora. How could they possibly think to do bad to Yosef? Elushem erov yitzram l'nekama. Yosef rega. But because of their great yitzer, hara, for vengeance, at that moment, lo hirgishu b'nace. They didn't feel they didn't absorb the message of the Nes, Afsheruos, even though they saw it. And that's why the Nes didn't help for them. In other words, according to Rav Moshe, the two Gemaras are connected thematically. There's a theme here. The theme is that if a Nes Nigla is going to impact on you, you have to focus on it and absorb its message. That's why Ner Chanukah 20 Amos is puzzle, because if it's above 20 Amos, you might see it, but you're not going to focus and absorb its message. And below 20 Amos, you'll see it and think about it and focus on it and absorb its message. Fine. And the Gemara continues. And how do I know? How do I know that it's possible to see a Nes Nigla and not absorb its message? From who, where do I know that from? From the brothers, by Yosef. That they saw the Nes Nigla and didn't absorb its message. So when the Gemara quotes the story of Yosef in the pits, right after it quotes Balakha of a Ner Chanukah above 20 Amos being puzzled, the Gemara is in a sense giving the reason why it's puzzled. It's a thematic connection. According to our Tzimma, it's coincidental they both happen to be 20 Amos. Too tall here, too deep there. According to Moshe, it's a thematic connection. There's a theme here. The theme is you want a Nes Nigla to you want a Nes Nigla to impact on you and change how you think. You have to absorb its message. So we have two examples of how it's possible to not absorb the message of a Nes Nigla, either above 20 Amos or the brothers with Yosef. It's a very deep thematic connection between the two Gemaras. Okay. So the fact that all of nature is really Neshem Hashem is one of the themes of Chanukah. This we find also in the Haftorah of Shabbos Chanukah as well. In the Haftorah of Shabbos Chanukah, there's a very striking nevuah that the nevuah is as follows. You have a menorah, and each of the seven cups of the menorah has a little tube. And each of these tubes is being fed by these vats of that there are these olive trees being squeezed into the vats, and the vats go into the tubes into the menorah. Very strange nevuah. There are a lot of chatim what this nevuah means. And as part of the nevuah, the pasuk says, "Lo b'chad b'lo b'koach ki ruchim arkem tzvakos." Not with strength, but rather with my spirit, ruchi, Hashem said. So Rav David Feinstein Shlita is quoted as saying, he thinks this is exactly the pshat of this nevuah. That this nevuah means when you see a menorah burning, don't think, oh, it's natural oil burning. Oil is burning naturally. No, when a menorah is burning, it's really as if there's a pipeline from Shemayim causing the oil to burn. That's exactly the pshat of the nevuah. Lo b'chai b'lo b'chol ki ruchi amar Hashem tzvakos. Why does oil burn? Why does oil burn? The nevuah saying why? Because of my ruchi. Because of my spirit. Oil burns naturally, quote unquote, because Hashem makes it burn. So the Haftorah of Shabbos Chanukah fits very nicely into this theme that one major theme of Chanukah is recognizing and thanking Hashem for Nes Nistras, either the Nes Mechama or the Nes, or the either the Nes Nistra of Mechama or the Nes Nistra of oil burning. Is it connected to the Haftorah clear? But I think it's a very, very nice connection. I just saw today a beautiful pshat in the Kushas Levi, Raditzik Levi Raditzik, a beautiful pshat. He says, he thinks, he discusses this idea that one theme of Chanukah is to appreciate that all of nature is really Neshem Hashem. And he says, Al Derech Hashvush, that this might be the pshat in a Gemara. This is not the pshat pshat, but it's a deeper pshat. The Gemara talks about how long the Ner Chanukah has to be lit for. When you light Nechanim, how long does that have to stay lit for? So the Gemara says, when the sun sets, or the stars come out, whatever the shot is, until Tichla Regu Minashok means literally, until Regu means the legs, Tichla means it's gone from the marketplace. Meaning until people are gone from the marketplace, people hang out in the marketplace in the old days, a little while after it gets dark, then they go home. So your neighbor's Chanukah have to stay lit until Tichle Rego Min Hashuk, until the legs, the feet, are gone from the marketplace. That is what the Gemara means, Pashut Shah. Is that clear? So he gives a deeper pshat. He says the word Regel often refers to Hergel, that which happens all the time, that which we're accustomed to. I mean, the word Regel, he says, is another word for Teva, nature. Nature is natural. We're gilus. It happens all the time. Nature is part of the natural, ordinary world. he says the Ner Hanukkah stays lit until Tichle Regel Min Hashuk, until Jews realize that there is no Hergel, there is no Teva. Get rid of that thought from your mind. The whole point of the Ner Hanukkah is Tichle Regel Min Hashuk. Don't, until it's gone, don't think that what goes on out there in the Shuk is Hergel, is Teva. It's not Teva. It's an Eish from Hashem. You know, he interprets like homiletically. Aderach HaJewish, Aderach HaChassidus, I guess you could say. That regel there means hergel, that the nature, the way things always are, it's the natural world. Hergel, it's not hergel. Get rid of that thought from your mind. Tichle regel min hashuk. Get rid of this thought of nature. Now, source number five. What I'm going to say now is based on the Ur of Dalyahu. Not exactly, but it's based on the Ur of Dalyahu in source number five. So he discusses there another major theme of Hanukkah, which is the spiritual struggle between Yavan and the Hashmonaim. There was a spiritual struggle between the Greeks and the Jews. And he points out at great length in the Ur of Dalyahu that the Greeks did not want to destroy physically the Jewish people at all. I mean, the Greeks didn't even want to destroy the Beis Hamikdash. The Greeks did not destroy the Beis Hamikdash. It's a little strange. They could have, but they didn't. He says, so what was the Greeks' goal? What was the essence of the Muhammad? The essence of the spiritual war was that the Greeks wanted to wipe out the spiritual singularity of the Jewish people. This is what he explained. The Greeks wanted to wipe out the spiritual singularity of the Jewish people. Meaning, he explains as follows. The Greeks were into Teva, nature. The Greeks were very into nature. Everything's natural. The natural human body is perfect, it's awesome. That's why so many of their statues are not wearing clothes, and things like that. The Greeks were into Teva. So the Greeks felt, you live in a world of Teva. So naturally speaking, different groups developed differently. The Greeks developed one way, the Chinese developed another way, but all within Teva. So the Greeks wanted that the same way the Jews would study Greek philosophy, the Greeks would study Jewish philosophy. Jewish philosophy are captured in the Torah. He calls it Jewish culture. He calls it culture, kuf, vav, lamed, tes, vav, rei, culture. That's what he says, culture. So the Greeks' goal was that the same way there's a Chinese culture and a Greek culture and a Chinese philosophy and a Greek philosophy, there's a Jewish culture, Jewish philosophy. So let them have the Torah as long as they realize that it's all part of Teva. And the same way the Greeks develop one way within the natural world, the Jews develop another way. But everything is based on Teva. Teva, Teva, Teva. Of course, that's not our belief. Our belief is the Torah is something ruchnius on top of Teva. But the Greeks said no. The Greeks wanted to wipe out the spiritual singularity of the Jewish people. The Jews are another group that developed with their own philosophy, their own approach to life, but within the laws of nature. The same way, again, the Chinese think things differently than the Greeks. By a lot of things. It's not because the Chinese are more ruchnius. They just developed differently, given their different cultural backgrounds. That was the Greeks' approach to their attack against Jewish people. So he says that, and he says that explains why the Greeks chose three specific mitzvot which they focused on in their daily. The Greeks, according to Chazal, there were three specific mitzvot which they attacked. Well, what I'm saying now is based on what he said. It's not exactly what he says. Based on what he said, the three mitzvot they attacked were Bris Mila, Shabbos, and Kiddush HaChodesh. Bris Mila, Shabbos, and Kiddush HaChodesh. So each one of these three symbolizes the idea. The Greeks believed in Teva, and they wanted to wipe out any semblance, any idea of, you know, the fact that we believe in more than Teva. So they attacked three mitzvos, which get to the heart of this anti-Teva approach, or on top of Teva approach. The Jewish people, we believe there's Teva, and there's Ruchnius on top of Teva. And they said no. So let's go one by one. Number one, you have Bris Mila. Bris Mila obviously is the ultimate symbol that the human body, the goof, is not just a natural human body in the natural world. No. There's more to life than just having a human body. There's what Bris Mila is, a ruchnius stamp on the goof which Hashem gives us. Bris Mila is the ultimate symbol of there is more to this world than just having a goof. It's a ruchnius stamp on the goof. This is completely against the Greeks' approach to the world. They believe the body is perfect. So you're born perfect. Well, how would you want to do Bris Mila? That's ridiculous. there's nothing more perfect than nature. By doing Bais Nigla, we're saying, no, there is more perfect than nature. There's a Ruchniyus stamp on top of the natural world. We don't just stick with whatever Hashem gives us, the natural world. We put a Ruchniyus stamp on the natural world. That's the ultimate symbol of that idea. There's more to the world than just Teva. That's why the Greeks attacked Bais Nigla. Because their approach is that all there is to the world is Teva. So Bais Nigla symbolizes the idea that there's more, that when it comes to the goof, there's more to life than just Teva. There's a Ruchniyus stamp on the Teva. That explains very well Bais Nigla. Then you have Shabbos. Shabbos again fits very well. It's obvious that Shabbos symbolizes that when it comes to the natural world, specifically when it comes to productivity in the natural world, productivity, a person works and works and works, they produce things. So there's more to life than just producing things in the natural world. A person doesn't just work to produce. That's what animals do. Sometimes animals rest because they want to rest to work harder the next day. Okay. But the idea is that there's a day of rest, which is a day of ruchnius, of spirituality. Meaning here I am, I work, and then I say, listen, I'm taking a day off now. Not to rest and relax. The day off is focus on Hashem. Focus on ruchnius. Shabbos symbolizes there is more to your productive life than just the teva of producing, then take a rest. My life of melacha, my life of working, is there's a ruchniyus stamp on my life of melacha. There's a ruchniyus stamp. The ruchniyus stamp is that by stopping from melacha one day a week, I'm testifying there's more to life than producing things in this world, than being an accountant or a businessman or whatever I do for a living. What's more to life is focus on Hashem. So Shabbos symbolizes that within a human being's productivity, there's more to life than just being a natural producer of things. Animals produce things. They work, they produce, whatever. They build things, they build homes for themselves. People do that. But there is a spiritual stamp on top of this physical productivity. That's symbolized by the Shabbos. Now, my brother takes off Shabbos and Yom Tov, whatever, and his co-workers would ask him, they say, you don't go to the beach when you're home on Saturday, or you're home, let's say Saturday. You don't watch college football. He said, no, so what do you do? What do you do? You're in jail. He said, no, it's the best day of the week for me. He tries to be good at it. He explains what it means. Ruchnius, you daven better, you focus on Hashem more. That's what Shabbos means. Shabbos means that there is a ruchnius stamp on the world of Teva. Focused primarily on the world of productivity. There's a ruchnius stamp on the world of Teva. So both Bais Nigla and Shabbos directly symbolize a ruchnius stamp on the world of Teva. The Greeks say, no, we believe in Teva, Teva, Teva. They attack these two mitzvahs. The third mitzvah the Greeks attacked was Kiddush HaChodesh. Kiddush HaChodesh is as follows. Kiddush HaChodesh means that Beis Din decided when Rosh Chodesh happened. According to the Jewish calendar, there are two possible days when Rosh Chodesh could be, every month. Let's say it would be Tuesday or Wednesday. And Adim would come to Beis Din and say, we saw the new moon last night. And the Beis Din would test them. Did we really see it or not? And if Beis Din accepted testimony, they make today Rosh Chodesh. And if Beis Din said no, then tomorrow will be Rosh Chodesh. Kiddush Chodesh means Beis Din decides when Rosh Chodesh happens. This is interesting. This means as follows. Let's say Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It'll be Tuesday or Wednesday. Who decides when Rosh Chodesh is going to be? Who decides? Hashem or Beis Din? Beis Din. I mean, Hashem gave the range. But Beis Din decides when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. Tuesday or Wednesday. Which means, who's deciding when Pesach is going to be? Beis Din. Because Pesach is the 15th day of Nisan. Pesach is 2 weeks after Rosh Chodesh. So if Rosh Chodesh is Tuesday, Pesach will be two Tuesdays later. If Rosh Chodesh is Wednesday, Pesach will be two Wednesdays later. So someone asks you a question. Who decides exactly what day Pesach will be on? The answer is not Hashem. The answer is Beis Din. Hashem gave a date in the Torah. But Hashem gave Beis Din the authority to decide when that date is going to happen during the month. It's an incredible idea. If you eat, let's say Beis Din says Tuesday is Rosh Chodesh. That means if you eat Chametz two Tuesdays later, you're Chayav Karos, you're Chayav Nisan. Let's say Beis Din says Wednesday is Rosh Chodesh. If you eat chametz two Tuesdays later, no problem. It's not Pesach yet. So Beis Din is deciding whether a day will be kadosh 2 weeks later. Real kedusha. Kedusha which affects whether you're chayav misa if you eat chametz in that day or not. Not Hashem. Beis Din is creating kedusha in the world. Beis Din is taking an ordinary day, sunset to sunset, and saying this ordinary day, we, Beis Din, are making kadosh. Hashem made Shabbos kadosh. Every 7 days, it's kadosh from Shabbos. Yom Tov is made kadosh by Beis Din. That's why there's a difference in our tshivas. On Shabbos, we say, Baruch Hashem, Hashem, Mekadesh HaShabbos. Who's Mekadesh Shabbos? By himself? Hashem. Then we add, but Hashem does everything by himself. On Yom Tov, we say, Baruch Hashem, Mekadesh Yisrael, Be'azman. Hashem's Mekadesh us, B'nai Yisrael. And then, together, we're Mekadesh the Yom Tov. That's why we put the word Yisrael in first. Based in act as our representatives, when they're Mekadesh the Kodesh. So all of Am Yisrael, through Based in, is Mekadesh the Yom Tov. Now this is an incredible concept. This means Based in, meaning Am Yisrael, Am Yisrael with Beis Din as our representatives, has the ability to take time, ordinary, mundane time, and make it kadosh. Beis Din has the ability to make time kadosh. So Kiddush HaChodesh is a symbol of kedusha in the world in the aspect of time. You know, when you think about nature. So one of the ultimate strengths of nature is time. That time, every day is the same. Sunrise, sunset, rise, sets, rise, sets, rise, sets. To say that one day is different than another day, you're saying, I don't believe in the natural world. There's more to the world, there's more to life than just the natural world. I believe one day is special. So Shabbos is one thing that we already discussed. But Kiddush HaChodesh is the ultimate way of saying that I believe there's more to the world than just the time comes of natural time. I can take time, make a kadosh. So the Greeks understood this. So the Greeks attacked the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. Because these three mitzvahs, which attack this concept, these three mitzvahs, which symbolize in a very striking way, there's more to the world than just teva. There's kedusha in the world. There's a ruchnius or kadosh stamp on the physical world. These are the mitzvahs which the Greeks attack. This idea that Kiddush HaChodesh symbolizes putting kedusha into the physical world, into zman, answers another question. It's a famous question which is discussed, which is as follows. What is the first mitzvah in the Torah given to Bnei Yisrael? Kiddush HaChodesh, this mitzvah. The first mitzvah we got as a nation is Kiddush HaChodesh. It would be the beginning of Perek Yud-Beis Shmos. The question is why? If I were to choose a mitzvah to be the first mitzvah in the Torah, I would choose Shema. I would choose Emunah B'Hashem, maybe learning Torah. Why Kiddush HaChodesh? So I saw an answer that's given is as follows. That Kiddush HaChodesh reflects what Torah Mitzvah is all about. Kiddush HaChodesh reflects what Torah Mitzvah is all about in the following way. You know, time is the ultimate enemy of a person. No matter what a person does, no matter what they try to do, time conquers all. And eventually a person is nifter. There's no way to beat them. Time is the ultimate enemy of a person. No matter what you do, you can't beat time. However, we don't believe that. Because when a Jew does a mitzvah, so that mitzvah that you do in this world earns you schar, which is nitzri, to last forever. Or if you want to say it differently, when you do a mitzvah, that mitzvah changes your neshama for the better, and that'll last forever. Same idea, either way, whichever way you like better. You do schar, or changes your neshama. That means I've taken a moment in time, and this moment in time will now last forever. I have conquered time. Time is the ultimate enemy. Time is the ultimate limiting factor of a human being. But it's not true. If a Jew does Torah mitzvot, then they have taken every moment of their day and make it infinite, make it nitzri. You've conquered time. It doesn't only mean learning and davening. If a person is an accountant and works in a law firm and speaks appropriately and acts appropriately and dresses appropriately, and people know this person is an Orthodox Jew, he or she acts differently than everyone else, that's Kiddush Shem. So you're walking Kiddush Shem. So you're at the office 8 hours a day, 9 hours, 10 hours a day. Those 10 hours are nitzchi, because you have acted, you have Mekadosh Shem Hashem for 10 hours every day. It's nitzchi. So what Torah Mitzvah is all about is conquering the ultimate enemy of time. As opposed to time, the ultimate enemy, time is an opportunity. Every moment in time is an opportunity to create nitzchius that lasts forever. A person can take an ordinary moment of time and make a kaddish. Which mitzvah best symbolizes this idea that you can take ordinary time, make a kaddish? Kiddush HaKodesh. That's what Beis Din does. Beis Din takes an ordinary day, Tuesday, and says that Tuesday is going to be a Yom Tov. Real Kedusha. You turn a light on Tuesday because Beis Din says so. But if Beis Din makes a Yom Tov, you're Chayav Malchus. It's an Isser. It's an amazing idea. So Kiddush HaKodesh symbolizes that man can make time Kadosh. And that idea of making time Kadosh is the basic symbol of what Torah Mitzvah is all about. So for this reason, I think it's a very good shot why Kiddush HaKodesh might be the first mitzvah in the Torah, because it reflects what all of Torah Mitzvah is all about, which is taking the ordinary moments of time and making it Kadosh. I can put a Rukhniya stamp on an ordinary mundane moment of time. So that's what the Greeks wanted to attack the spiritual seniority of Jewish people, that everything's Teva. Of course, the truth is, it's not. The truth is, we have the Torah. And what the Torah means to Bnei Israel is that we don't just live in a physical world. Our job is to learn the Torah and guard the Torah, meaning there is a ruchnius component to life. When a person learns Torah and keeps the Torah, they're saying there's more to life than Teva. There's a ruchnius component to life. That's obvious. And that was exactly the struggle that's exactly what the Chashem Noyim said. We're not just Teva. Many Jews became Hellenists, maybe too many Jews assimilated, and they got into the Greek approach to life. The Chashem Noyim said, no, we have a Torah. The Torah means Ruchnius and Kedusha. So therefore, we believe there's a Ruchnius part to life as well, obviously, on top of the Teva. And Kinei Mitzvah V'Torah Or, when a person sees the light of the Ner Chanukah, they're supposed to think about Torah. The idea that the Greeks said everything is Teva, and we're saying no, there's a Torah, there's Ruchnius, and when I see the Ner Chanukah, Kinei Mitzvah V'Torah Or, the light of the Ner Chanukah is like the light of the Torah, I realize there's more to life than just nature, there's a life of Ruchnius and Torah. So I think it works out very nicely that the two major themes of Chanukah are very parallel, and they both merge in the Ner Chanukah. The two major themes of Chanukah are very parallel, and they both merge in the Ner Chanukah. One theme is that what we believe that all of nature is an Eser from Hashem. It's not just nature. There's Ruchnius in the natural world. There's Hashem in the natural world. You see the Nesnigla of Hashem, and you realize all of the natural world really is Kadosh and Ruchnius and Eser from Hashem. That's one thing. There's more to the world than just Teva. It's really Kadosh and Ruchnius from Hashem. So too, the Greeks said the whole world is Teva. And we say, no, the Ner Chanukah symbolizes Torah. Torah means there's more to the world than just Teva. There's a Ruchnius component to this natural world as well. So when a person sees the Ner Chanukah, they're focusing on, there's Torah, there's an Eish Nigla, that teaches me there's more to this world than just Teva. All of Teva is a sister from Hashem, and all of Teva has to be used to serve Hashem in a Ruchnius manner. So both of these major themes of Chanukah really merge by two sides of the same coin. There's more to life than Teva. Teva is an Eser from Hashem, and Teva has to be used to serve Hashem. Okay, just very briefly, I want to just use this to discuss something. The long shir, not all Shabbos tables appreciate a shir that lasts for an hour. So we'll give 10 minutes quickly. It's better for the Shabbos table, which happens to fit into this there. I think this whole year pretty well. And for those in my Kippur, so I apologize if we heard this already. But the famous question, which is as follows. We always read the Parashah says, Vayeshev and Miketz on Chanukah. The question is, why? That's the way it works out. It's always Miketz or Vayeshev on Shabbos Chanukah. Why? Nothing in Torah Judaism is by coincidence. Nothing is by coincidence. There's a reason. Chazal had a reason, whoever, Hashem had a reason, it worked out. Why did it work out this way? So there are three pesukim given. There are three pesukim given for what? For why this is true. One is from Ramirsky. Ramirsky says in Hagyon HaLacha, a beautiful pesha. He says that one of the things of Hanukkah is Rabin Biyad Ma'atim. That when you're on the side of Hashem, even if you're in the minority, you're going to win. Hashemarim were in the minority, they won anyway. If you're on the side of Hashem, they won anyway. Rabin Biyad Ma'atim. Ramirsky says, this theme of Rabin Biyad Ma'atim is a major theme of Vayeshev and Mikim. For example, the brothers wanted to kill Yosef. Reuben said, no, don't kill him, throw him into the pit. Reuben was 1 against 9. He was the Bechor, but still, he was 1 against 9. Reuben was on the side of Emes, on the side of truth. He stood up to his brother and said, don't kill Yosef, you throw him into the pit instead. That's an example of Rabin Biyad Ma'atim. Another example. When Yosef decided to borrow his dreams, so Yosef was in a room full of atheists, full of Obdei Avodah Zarah. And we see, if you read the Pesukim carefully, you see that Yosef was pushing Hashem's name into the picture. Yosef was like hooked on Hashem's name. And Yosef was able, one against the whole room, to bring some measure of emunah to the people in the room. For example, when Yosef comes into the room, Paro says to Yosef, Tishma chalom v'tzoroto. You'll hear the chalom, and you will pray for the dream. Yosef says, no, Biladai, not me, Hashem will decipher Paro's dream. And if we read the Pesukim, Yosef keeps on mentioning Hashem's name. How Hashem, Hashem, I mean, he says Elohim. Elohim, 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 Elohim. Yosef is hooked on Hashem's name. Does not mean it's Hashem deciphering the dreams. And finally at the end, Paro says to his people, Paro himself uses Hashem's name twice. You read the Pesukim. Paro himself says, Achoy Elohim, Elohim, etc. Hashem has shown us this to be true. So Yosef, by himself, one person against the whole room of atheists, of Obdei Avodah Zarah, he was Makari Paro, to some level of Emunah. That's the theme of Rabin Biyad Ma'atim, that when you're on the side of truth, so even if you're in a minority, you're going to win out. That's our Mirsky's connection between Vayeshev Miketz and that's a nice shot, but not connected with our truth. The second shot that's given is, that people give is as follows. That the story of Vayeshev Miketz is the story of Yosef's life. Yosef's life from the time he was sold to becoming vice president of Mitzrayim. All of Yosef's life, if you had to use two words for Yosef's life, both the two words be nations. That you had many, many coincidental events, and all these coincidental events fit into a big picture. Yosef was in the pit, and he was sold to the Magi, who sold him to the Magi, who happened to sell him to Potiphar's house. And Yosef was so successful that Potiphar trusted him with his wife. And his wife happened to desire Yosef, and Yosef resisted her advances. And he happened to end up in a certain jail. And it happened to be that in that jail, the Tsar Mask and Tsar Ophim ended up in the same jail as Yosef. And they happened to have a dream. And Yosef was sent for the dream. And then it happened to be Paro had a dream a little while later that no one could decipher. And they called Yosef, and Yosef sent for the dream, and he's vice president of Mitzrayim. Each event by itself is coincidental. Nothing too exciting about it. But the whole picture is a plan, part of Hashem's plan. Hashem had a plan. Hashem wanted Yosef to be the vice president of Mitzrayim. Hashem wanted Yosef, clearly, to be vice president of Mitzrayim and to be the person who would help in Israel in Mitzrayim physically. Hashem knew we were going to go back to Mitzrayim. We had to have help there, a place to live, food to eat. Hashem had Yosef get down to Mitzrayim and become to be the one who helped in Israel settle in Mitzrayim. So the whole story of Vayeshev Miketz is one big Neis Nistar, that Hashem is running the show within quote-unquote coincidental events. That's it. So I think it works out very nicely. One of the major things of Hanukkah is that events that appear to be coincidental and natural are really governed by Hashem. One of the major themes of Vayeshev Miketz is events that appear to be coincidental and natural are really governed by Hashem. So that shot of the connection of Vayeshev Miketz to Hanukkah fits into very well, I think, the first part of tonight's shiur. The third shot of Kinshav Eishiv Miketz to Hanukkah, I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Shechter Shlita. He was quoting earlier a Chorin. Rav Shechter said as follows. He said that One of the major themes of Vayeshev and Miketz is the fact that Yosef, alone in Mitzrayim, raised his two children to be tzaddikim. The Asher and Ephraim became tzaddikim, part of the Shvatim. This is amazing. They had no chevra. Their entire chevra was the worst country in the world, full of zima, the worst things in the world. All of the other Shvatim were raised with the chevra. They had each other. They had Yaakov. They had each other. They spent a lot of time in Eretz Yisrael. They were born and raised partially in Lavan's house and partially back home in Eretz Yisrael. But they had a chevra. They had each other. They had a large group, and they spent a lot of time in Eretz Yisrael. Menashe and Ephraim became tzaddikim, raised in the very worst environment possible. They were in Yosef's house, but everything around them was total immorality, total destruction, from a Ruchni's perspective. So, Menashe and Ephraim in Mitzrayim symbolize a person maintaining the Masorah against a very difficult secular outside world. Menashe and Ephraim symbolize maintaining the Masorah against a difficult secular outside environment. That's what they symbolize. That's what Menashe and Ephraim symbolize. Rav Shechter said that's one of the symbols of that is one of the themes of Chanukah, that the Yavanim were trying to attack us in a spiritual sense and wipe us out, wipe out our spiritual singularity and destroy the Masorah. Many people assimilated, but the Chasidim said no, they held firm, and the Chasidim held on to the Masorah against the secular outside influences of the Chasidim. So one major theme of Chanukah is we maintain our Masorah, we maintain our connection with the Avodas Hashem, even when the whole world and the whole force of secular culture is against us. The Greek culture took over the whole world back then. It was the whole world was getting absorbed within the Greek approach to life. And the Chasam Rayim said, no, we can't get absorbed. We have a Masorah. We're not going to assimilate. We have a Masorah. And even when the whole world's against us, we maintain our Masorah. So what Yosef did for Menashe and Ephraim is exactly what the Chasam Rayim did against the Greeks. He maintained the Masorah against a very difficult secular culture. And this is a very good connection between Chanukah and Vayeshev and Miketz, maintaining our Masorah against a very difficult secular environment. And that is one of the major themes for us, that when we celebrate Chanukah and see the Ner Chanukah, we have to realize the Ner Chanukah means that one of my major goals in life, one of my major jobs in life is that I will raise my children to be part of themselves. And most of us who live in America, most of you are going to live in America, probably. And in America now, the secular culture is a pretty difficult one to deal with. There's a lot of assimilation. But it's doable. And your major job in life is to make sure that you raise your kids in a way, Mitzvah Shem, you raise your kids in a way that they maintain and are part of themselves. And they serve Hashem, and not Menashe and Ephraim, but like Menashe and Ephraim, that they serve Hashem and maintain connection with Hashem, even in difficult circumstances, even within a culture which is very anti-Torah. This is the bracha which we give to our kids. Part of the bracha we give to our kids is we say, be like Menashe and Ephraim. Why Menashe and Ephraim? Because Menashe and Ephraim symbolizes exactly that. Menashe and Ephraim were brought up, were raised in Mitzrayim. They're raised within the worst environment possible. The brothers were raised, again, partially in Eretz Yisrael, partially within a big chevra. They're raised by themselves. So the bracha we give to our kids is that we're saying to our children, we want to be part of the Masorah. No matter what happens, no matter what environment you're in, be part of the Masorah. That's what we choose Menashe and Ephraim as the bracha for our children, that's what some of us would say. And that might be a connection between the Vayeshev Miketz and Chanukah. So the two major themes of Chanukah both fit well as to why Vayeshev Miketz is read on Chanukah. Either the theme of events that could have been natural are governed by Hashem, or the theme of that there's a spiritual struggle of the Greeks and the Yavanim, of the Yavanim and the Chasmonai, that struggle, and maintain the Masorah against a difficult secular culture, which is the other possible theme of Vayeshev Miketz. We'll stop here.
When we speak about the struggle between the Yavanim and the Chasmonai, that the Yavanim wanted the idea of Jewish culture versus an idea of Torah, the Chashmonaim, there's another way of saying it. You see, the Yavanim, you know, we said they weren't against Torah. They translated the Torah, you know, into Greek. But that's true. they translated Torah Shebichsav. The Yavanim were totally against Torah Shebaal Peh, and many Mefarshim say that the struggle between the Yavanim and the Chashbonaim was really a struggle about Torah Shebaal Peh. And this is exactly the idea. You see, the Torah Shebichsav by itself can be construed and pulled this way or that way to mean almost anything. It's only because of the Torah Shebaal Peh that we have the one true explanation of the Torah Shebichsav, with all of the hashkafic messages that it's supposed to bring to us. It's only through the Torah Shebaal Peh that the Torah itself, the Torah Shebichsav, really comes to life. So the real struggle between the Yavanim and the Hashmonaim was over the Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichsav without Torah Shebaal Peh is like culture. Torah Shebichsav with, the culture of Judaism, that's the real Torah, that's the Kinei Mitzvah of the Torah, or the light of the Torah is only the real light of the Torah when it's both Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. So that sharpens a little bit the issue as far as the struggle between the Greeks and the Hashmonaim. So along those lines, Rav Shechter quoted a lot of Makoros, most of which from the B'nai Yisrael, which fit into that theme. So let's begin. The Gemara refers to Esther as Sof Kol HaNisim, the end of the miracles. The Gemara says, what do you mean? You have Chanukah. Chanukah came after. Megillas Esther happened during the Golus Bavel. And Chanukah happened during Ba'i Sheni. It came afterwards. So the Gemara says, yeah, Esther is the last of the Nisim that was written down. So you see already in that Gemara, by implication, some sort of reference, that Chanukah was not written down. There's no Megillah by Chanukah. Chanukah basically is the only Yom Tov that's not really directly discussed in a big way in Torah Shebichsav. All the Yom Tovs derais are in Torah Shebichsav. Purim is in Tanakh, and Chanukah it's hinted at in Tanakh in a few places, but it's not discussed in Tanakh in a big way. Chanukah really is Torah Shebaal Peh, which fits with this overall theme that the struggle on Chanukah was a struggle of Torah Shebaal Peh. When the world was created, it says in the Psukim, it says V'choshech al p'nei sahom, there was choshech. Excuse me, this choshech, the Medrash says, was Chochmas Yavan. What's the pshat that choshech is Chochmas Yavan? So the B'nai Yisrael and others explain the following idea. You know, Olam Hazeh is referred to as choshech. What's the pshat? Because at night things are unclear. You know, at night if you see a lamppost, might look like a person. It's hard to tell. Night and choshech, things are unclear. Olam Hazeh, things are very unclear. It's unclear what's right, what's wrong. Sometimes a person can convince himself that a mitzvah is an aveira, and that an aveira is a mitzvah. It's very hard to have clarity of the right way to live your life in Olam Hazeh. That's the idea that Olam Hazeh is called choshech. What's the one way to bring clarity to how to live your life? The Torah. Ner mitzvah, the Torah or. The light of the Torah brings light, brings a clarity to how to live your life here within the darkness, in a sense, of Olam Hazeh. That's the basic idea of Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Or. Now, Chochmas Yavan, which focuses on Olam Hazeh, Chochmas Yavan gives you a lot of light in Olam Hazeh. You can develop in science and develop in philosophy and all these different ways. But the problem is, Chochmas Yavan alone is very dangerous, because Chochmas Yavan alone, a person can convince himself, oh, I have a lot of Chochma, I have a lot of light. But the truth is, Chochmas Yavan doesn't give you any light about moral clarity and how to live your life. It only helps you develop more scientifically, develop more in philosophy, but to develop morally and ethically, for that you need the Torah. So therefore, Rav Shechter explained, to emphasize this point, that Chochmas Yavan by itself is really dangerous, and that the real Ha'ara is supposed to be, in other words, to think that Chochmas Yavanis is the real Ha'ara, the real light of this world, is very dangerous. So to emphasize that point, Chazal say that Chochmas Yavan is called Choshech, to show it's the opposite. You shouldn't think that's the real Ha'ara. There is light in Chochmas Yavan. There is some light. It helps us produce, we develop cures for diseases, we develop new ideas, and again, in science and in a whole bunch of areas. In psychology, we develop new ideas that are helpful to people. But we should never think that that's the true light. The true light is only the light which gives us moral clarity and teaches us how to live our lives. That's the light of the Torah. The real aura is only the Torah. And that's why Chazal say Chochmas Yavin is called Dafka Choshech. And the Bnei Tzitzchus explains this really fits very well into the whole Neis Chanukah. Neis Chanukah happened during Vayesheni. During Vayesheni, the Gemara tells us Hashem was angry at Bnei Yisrael, the Gemara Numa. Hashem was angry at us. Why was he angry at us? Because not enough Jews came back from Bavel. And therefore, we had a Nevuah that Vayesheni wasn't going to be such a great, amazing, based in Midrash in a great time period of Nevuah. And the Nevuah Taka ended. The Nevuah ended during Zman Vayesheni. There were Nevi'im around when we came back and rebuilt Vayesheni. So that the Mefarshim explained. Rav Shechter likes to quote from the Brisker Rav, the Griz, who refers to a Gemara in Zvachim, Adav Samach, that the Gemara says, you need a Navi to build the Beis HaMikdash. You might know where everything's supposed to go, and you know the size and the place, everything. But there's a din from the Gemara. The Gemara quotes it from Sukkim, that you need a Navi in order to build the Beis HaMikdash. So Hashem, in a sense, had to give us Navim when we came back for Bayesheni, because he wanted us to build the Beis HaMikdash. But that was it. So the Nevuah stopped. So now the Jews are sitting in Bayesheni without Nevuah. Now, Nevi'im give you clarity to tell you how to live your life. So the question is, well, what are we going to do now? Without our Navi, who's guiding us, what do we do? The answer is, we are guided by the Torah. So Hashem gave us the Yom Tov of Chanukah, the Yom Tov of Torah Shebaal Peh, to teach us that even without our Navi, even when we don't have the full the Nevuah, that we can essentially hear Hashem talking to us through a Navi. But there's a language of the Gemara, Chacham Adif Mi Navi. The Chachma of the Torah is, in a sense, even greater than the Nevuah. Because a Navi, he has to wait for the Nevuah. Sometimes Hashem doesn't give him a Nevuah, but a Chachma can learn the Torah. The Torah Shebaal Peh, you can delve into the Torah deeply. And through that deep delving into the Torah, you can achieve a clarity and an aura in this world. So that's the whole idea of Neis Chanukah, is that Bizman Bayesheni, without Nevuah, we still have the Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's all we need to have this light, this direction in life of how to live our lives here in Olam Hazeh through the Torah, even without a Navi. So the Ha'ara, which comes from the Torah Shebaal Peh, ends up being in a sense a substitute for the Nevuah, and it gives us this clarity of vision about how to live our lives here in Olam Hazeh. This was the real fight between the Yevanim and the Chashmonaim. Bnei Tzitzchus explains further something we find the number 36 in a few places connected to Chanukah. The Gemara says that the best way to light near Chanukah is the first night you light one candle, and the second night two candles, etc. So 1, 2, 3 up to 8. So if you add up all the numbers, that's 36. So the standard way of lighting near Chanukah is the standard best way is 36 candles. So the Bnei Tzitzchus also explains why 36, because if you look in the Talmud Bavli, there are 36 mesechtas, 36 tractates in the Shas that have Talmud Bavli. Talmud Bavli is considered the ultimate Torah Shebaal Peh. It's even stronger than the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Bavli is considered the Gemara written in Babel, the ultimate Torah Shebaal Peh. Not every mesechta is Talmud Bavli. If you count all the mesechtas, even ones with a small amount of Talmud Bavli, the Bnei Tzitzchus points out there are 36 mesechtas with Torah Shebaal Peh. So the 36 candles of Chanukah correspond to the 36 mesechtas of Torah Shebaal Peh. Exactly, the whole idea of Chanukah is this idea of the Yom Tov of Torah Shebaal Peh. The light of the Torah Shebaal Peh can give us clarity of how to live our lives. Furthermore, there's an interesting medrash which Rashi refers to in Brachos, but he doesn't quote the whole thing. When Hashem created the world, there was the ore. The ore that Hashem created was a very powerful, incredible ore. And Rashi quotes that Hashem felt that the world didn't deserve it, really. So Hashem put it away. Hashem put it away and saved it for the tzaddikim u'asid lavo, for the tzaddikim. The Medrash says, how long did that light shine before Hashem put it away? 36 hours. Interesting, again the number 36. And the Rokeach says, the Rokeach was a Rishon, the Rokeach says, the Bnei Tzitzchus quotes the Rokeach says, And where Taka did Hashem put the light? He put the light in the Torah Sheba'al Peh. That amazing light of Bria'as HaOlam was put into the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So it's a beautiful idea. It shone for 36 hours, that's the number 36. It was put into the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the 36 Gemaras and the Mesechtas of Talmud Bavli, which is exactly the idea of the 36 candles of Hanukkah. These are all remazim for the idea of Torah Sheba'al Peh. But if you want to get the true light, the true clarity of vision, but how to live your life, the way to do it is with heavy analysis, heavy delving into the Torah Sheba'al Peh. We can regain the Ha'ara of the Bria'as HaOlam, the clarity, the clear direction of Bria'as HaOlam, of how to live our lives the way Hashem wants us to, through the Torah Sheba'al Peh. This is one of the challenges of Chanukah, to rededicate ourselves to learning Torah Sheba'al Peh with more hasmana. You have more learning on Chanukah, not less, Rav Shechta says. He says during Chanukah, the yeshivas shouldn't get off, the colleges should be off, the yeshivas should keep on going, the college should be off. And the idea being that we want to achieve this clarity of how to live our lives, this horror, this light, through the Torah. There's nothing you can have, Chochmas Yavan too. You can use it for whatever it's good for, and there are a lot of things it's good for. But giving you more clarity of how to live your life, that we have only the light of the Torah. Rav Shechter told a story that the woman went and spent 4 years in Crown Heights studying Lubavitch. And she wrote a book about the Lubavitcher movement. She's a Jewish woman, but she wasn't religious. So there was an article written about her in Time magazine, and in the book she never talks about, you know, her own personal level of observance. So the interviewer asked her, well, you know, you've been there 4 years, you saw what it's like, do you have any intention of maybe becoming a Lubavitcher yourself? And she said no. She said, in the Lubavitcher world, everything is so clear. They know this is mutter, this is usser, this is right, this is wrong. Everything's so clear. So the person, that's not good. The person has to live in a little bit in a state of confusion. Things are uneasy, unclear. If everything's clear-cut, black and white, that's not the way to live your life. So Shechter said, that's ridiculous. Of course that's the way to live your life. If you're zocheh to achieve a clarity, that every question that comes before you, you know, what to do, you have a clear-cut answer. This is the right way, this is the wrong way, and you try to choose the right way, that's wonderful. The more Torah a person learns, the more dedicated they are to the halacha, the more that they'll find that they're making the right choices, and the choices are clear. Sometimes choices aren't so clear, so that's a little harder. But that we should bedafka want the choices not to be clear, we should bedafka want confusion, that's ridiculous. We want to serve Hashem as well as we can, and if the answer is clear, the answer is clear, Baruch Hashem. So this is the light of Chanukah, the Kiner Mitzvah of the Torah Or. It's really the Torah of the Or, the Torah Sheba'al Peh. This was the real struggle between the Greeks and the Chashmonaim, because it's really through Torah Sheba'al Peh that Torah changes from being just Jewish culture to being really the Torah. And this is why it happened Bizman Bayesheni, because Bayesheni was without Nevi'im. So Hashem wanted to show us that without Nevi'im we can still get this clarity through the Torah Sheba'al Peh. This fits with the Gemara that refers to Chanukah as a nace that was not written down in Tanakh. Exactly. It's not part of Torah Shebichsav. It's supposed to be the Yom Tov of Torah Sheba'al Peh. This fits with the idea that there are 36 candles on Chanukah, and the 36 candles of Chanukah correspond to the 36 Mesechtas of Talmud Bavli, which is the ultimate repository of Torah Sheba'al Peh. And it fits with the idea that that there are also 36 hours that this clear, shining light of Bria'as HaOlam shone forth, and it was put away, save for the tzaddikim. Where was it put? The Rokeach says it was put into the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Exactly, through the Torah Sheba'al Peh, you can achieve this light, this clarity of how to live your life. And that's, I think, a beautiful explanation from Rav Shechter, my Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita. Again, mostly based on the Bnei Yisachar, of the idea of Chanukah really being the Yom Tov of Torah Sheba'al Peh.
Recently I just discovered that the approach that we developed during this year, that the main thing we thank Hashem for on Chanukah are the miracles of the Nitzachon of the Milchama and not the Neis Pach Shemen, based on the Maharal, that's exactly the approach that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal takes in his approach to Chanukah, and he actually says his approach not just al pi hashkafa but al pi halacha as well. when you light the Neros Chanukah, you have to have in mind that you're doing it for the to commemorate the miracles. You have to have kavana for the miracles that you're commemorating. Which miracles are you supposed to have in mind? Rav Shlomo Zalman says in Halicho Shlomo, Chelek Beis Perek Tez Zayin, he says Iker Takanas Chachamim is that we should think about the miracles Shasal Avasin Abimi Mahem V'Nitzachon Hamilchamot, the Nitzachon of the wars. Ulechein Kavanas Halev V'Shas Harlaka V'Hodos Ulele Lashem Al Nisei Hamilchamot. He may Iker HaMitzvah. That's the main part of the mitzvah, to be thinking about those miracles. So too, when you say the bracha Shasal Nisim Avasinu, of Shlomo Zalman says Bircha Shasal Nisim Ein hakavano l'neis metzias pach shemen, ella neis hamilchamos. The neis that we're referring to in Shas Anisim is the neis of the milchamos. That's just as I explained. The main thing we thank Hashem for on Chanukah is the miracles He did for us in the military victories. And maybe again, that's the main thing we're thanking Hashem for in the on Chanukah. The same thing. That's why in the El Anisim we don't mention the neis pach shemen, nor in the Haneiros Halalu. Says I'm just reading from the Halicho Shlomo. Bulonis kar klal neis pach shemen. V'chein b'nesach ha'anisim. We don't ain omrim l'hadik neiros u'lehodos. We don't mention l'hadik neiros u'lehodos. The main mitzvah is l'hodos u'lehashem on the nitzachon of the mochamo. So I was very happy to find that Baruch Hashem, that he has exactly the same approach as we developed in Shir. Also, on the footnotes here, the idea of Chanukah being Yom Tov, of Torah Shebaal Peh, he says the same thing, he develops the same thing at great length. He says that's why Chanukah is not written down in Tanakh. Why? Gam lo nitna li katev, ki choli kara lo ba el lefarsim esim unotein b'Torah Shebaal Peh, she'achad mikinyani ha-Torah. The connection of Chanukah and Torah Shebaal Peh is very strong. He says that's the whole theme of Chanukah. The teaches our Amunah in Torah Shebaal Peh, as we discussed, the connection of Chanukah and Torah Shebaal Peh, and our connection to it, our dedication to it, and that's Taka why it's now written down in Tanakh. So Baruch Hashem, both themes that we developed in the Shir, A, that the main Nes we think Hashem for on Chanukah is the Nes of the Mechama, B, that Chanukah is the Nes is the Yom Tov Torah Shebaal Peh, Rav Shlomo Zalman says exactly both of those, almost word for word, in the Sefer Halichos Shlomo. Okay, we'll start.